of any of my record. I'm proud of it. I think that in my decision to seek the Progressive Conservative seat for London North is a decision because of my beliefs in the Conservative Party. I'm running as a Conservative for the Conservatives and certainly not against Ron Van Horn, for instance. I've known him too many years. So I think that the Conservatives have served this province well for 42 years. I see that we have had a good record of progressive advancements, of job creation, of recoveries. I think that the Conservative Party is, in my opinion, the proper party to continue the power in Ontario.
Just a quick supplementary, perhaps, but there are some people that are saying 42 years in power, enough is enough. Are you running into that in the Hustings?
Not at all, Don, and thank you for bringing that up. As a matter of fact, the 42 years with the type of record, past performance of the type of management they've had through Ontario in comparison with the type of management they had of the country, there's a comparison, and it's favorable to us, of course.
Marion Boyd, running for the NDP, is in her first election campaign. Perhaps we could ask her why she decided to get into the campaign and what she found out there.
Well, I think essentially the reason I'm here is that I really disagree with what Mr. Evola has said about the record of the Conservatives in the last 42 years. I think it is time for a change, particularly a change that favors the ordinary people in Ontario rather than just the rich and privileged. And we feel very strongly that there needs to be a change that brings about new policies that will ensure full employment, that will foster economic and social equality for women, that will look after the poor and the rest in our society in a way that the Conservative government has not. We feel very strongly that it's time to make changes for people, and that is the whole gist of our campaign. I'm surprised that Mr. Evola hasn't found the pressure for change in the riding. I certainly have in talking to people. And a large number of people are saying, we have to try something new. What we've got isn't working very well. People are losing their jobs. People are being forced to lower their standard of living, and it is time for a change.
One of the new faces that Londoners will be looking at on the ballot, perhaps not faces, I should say names, will be the Freedom Party, represented in London North by Robert Smink, a businessman in London. I believe it's a video arcade that one of your operations that you run. And just to perhaps familiarize Londoners with this this new name, Freedom Party, what is it and why are you in the election?
Well, thank you, Don, for having us here today. The reason that I'm in the election is that we think that the Freedom Party is the only positive alternative to the three parties that we've been used to dealing with in the past. We think that the election is, our platform is going to be the freedom of choice. We're the only party that's promoting freedom of choice. And we think that it's the government's job to protect our freedom of choice instead of taking it away, which is usually what they end up doing.
Well, perhaps we could get to the candidates and ask them a little later if we really are losing freedoms under the existing government. But first, I think Jeff Gilhooley has some questions.
Yeah, well, let's get into the jobs issue. I think there is some agreement that it seems to be the major focus of this campaign. Let's start with a few things that are given. We have fairly high unemployment. We have many who have jobs afraid of keeping those jobs. They're certainly concerned about that. And a third feature that I really want to get into is the impact of a plant closure is not only tough on the individual, but it's tough on the community that happens in. My question is, what are you and your party prepared to do to make sure that employers have sound economic reasons that justify a heavy layoff or a plant closure? Let's start at the other end around and start with you, Mr. Smith.
Well, I think that take a balanced point of view. Employers don't close factories and plants because they're making a lot of money. They close plants and factories because they're not making any money. And I think you should keep that in mind. Another aspect to job losses and job creation is the fact that I think a lot of people don't take into consideration that 90% of the people in this province are working. And, you know, I think that's, I have empathy for the people that don't have jobs, but we should keep in mind that 90% of the people are working, and they are paying their taxes and creating the type of province that we enjoy today.
I'm going to save this supplementary for a little later, but let me go at it right now with respect to the first part of your answer. We had a situation in Hamilton last year. Allen Industries closed its plant there and moved to Mexico. And the only reason that we were able to determine that this took place was because Mexico doesn't have a minimum wage and doesn't have severe safety standards. These are things which we've grown to accept in the province of Ontario as basic conditions for employment. We don't know that they moved because they weren't making money. What I'm asking is, would you be prepared to put in some sort of policy which allows the government to find out if there in fact is an economic problem with that company?
Well, I think that the reason that companies do things like move to places where there are less rules and regulations is because they want that freedom of choice to run their companies the way that they see it's in their best interest to do so.
Okay, Marianne?
Well, obviously, if our major concern is profit, then we're not going to care very much about what happens to employees when we move companies out, when we close them. Making money depends on what we're talking about, doesn't it? If we're not getting a 30% profit, which many manufacturers are getting, and we only get 25%, is that not making money? Certainly, it seems that a lot of employers seem to think it is. We feel very strongly that there should be legislation insisting upon a real examination of what's going on when plants close. We feel that there should be efforts by the government to ensure that employees have lots of termination notice and severance pay in lieu of termination if that's the economic condition that requires that. We certainly feel that companies have some responsibility to their employees in terms of job security. One of the reasons that manufacturers in Japan have such loyalty from their employees is that they build into the whole system a sense of job security, and the employees feel that they are safe from termination and lack of job security for no cause of their own. And we feel that this is a good goal for us to look at. It has worked well in Japan, which is looked upon as being a very, very successful country economically. We don't feel that it should be any different here.
Mr. Holland?
Yes, thank you. No, I feel it. Certainly there are approaches that should be made to management and labor for cooperation in that field, and to, if there is a problem, in other words, productivity seems to be the key word. And if you can produce something here in London, Ontario, at a competitive price, and be able to sell it in Toronto or in Detroit or whatever at a fair profit. And I don't say that we're looking at any other business. I don't know where the numbers 30% profit comes from. I don't know where 25% profit comes from. All I know is that no laborer is going to leave his house to go to work without making a profit. In other words, he wants a salary. I don't think it's any different for the manufacturer who owns the company or a group of to leave their house expecting to make a profit. I think that if they have $1 million tied up in capital, that they have a risk profit there. And unless others put up a risk profit, they shouldn't complain about somebody putting them to work, allowing them to make a salary, and take home a profit, which is their salary. I would like to see more discussion, a flagging system, if there is a problem with a local industry. And I'm saying local at this time, sort of reverting back to my automatic.
We've been fairly fortunate here,
yes,
in this city with respect to that. But what I want to...
we've had a lot, too much of it.
What I want to deal with specifically, though, is if you were elected and the Conservatives form the next government, would you be in favor of some sort of system which forced companies to open their books?
No, I don't say forcing companies to open books. If a company out of the blue, and they have been running well, and just out of the blue want a closure, I would want some questions answered, and I would hope that the government would step in and get those questions answered. As far as arbitrarily taking over the free press's books or what have you, I have a little problem with that. This is not Russia, and I don't feel that anyone should be compelled to have the Gestapo come in and say, I want to see everything you're doing or have done in the past.
I can hardly wait to get into this topic. In the session that we had between 1977 and 1981, that was minority government. One of the major concerns that all of us faced then was the phenomena of plant shutdowns. And so the government, in its wisdom, set up a select committee on plant shutdowns and employee adjustment. Now, as soon as the 81 election came along, that committee was disbanded, and I fault the government for that. The phenomena of plant shutdowns did not cease when the Conservatives got a majority in March of 1981. Now, beyond that, and you talk about the need for a change, I would submit to you that a government that does something when it's in a minority situation just to accommodate a problem and then backs away from it as soon as it gets a majority is not a good government. Now, this particular committee came up with an interim report which addressed itself to termination notice, severance pay, many of the things that Marion talked about. And as a matter of fact, the New Democrat policy proposals, many of them enunciated this past week by Mr. Ray, come from this committee report. And by the way, on this committee were Conservatives, New Democrats, and Liberals, including myself. So, I think, to go back to your original question about should employers be allowed to shut down and move wherever, I guess in law they can do anything they wish. But in fact, there are many constraints that I think they have to face. Now let me submit that if an employer moves simply because he doesn't have a minimum wage to meet in Mexico, or that the safety standards in Mexico are either non-existent or very low, that's a better place to work in, I would say no. I would say we should be darn proud of what we have done here in our country to protect the laborer.
Well, this is the point that we're getting at, is that doesn't exist at the present time. In fact, we don't know the bottom line economic situation of a company that moved.
Oh, indeed. Now, let me just complete that. I was going to submit that at least we have some protections, i.e. minimum wage, that you mentioned in your question. There are still many areas of improvement that we should address, and I would submit to you that if we form the government, when we form the government, and that will only be a few weeks from now, we will reestablish the select committee, because the phenomena is still with us. And one thing that hasn't been talked about by anyone along here, I think we'd all jump at the chance to talk about foreign ownership, and that faceless person or entity somewhere in the United States or in Europe who makes a corporate decision in a boardroom and says, that's it, folks, plant X in London, Ontario is closing its doors. They don't give a hoot about the employees.
Mr. Van Horn, what would you do then if some giant American company decided it was going to close? I think we had an interesting situation just the other day in the news involving white farm equipment. And the American parent just decided it wasn't happy with the financial arrangement and shut it down. Are you suggesting the Liberals would say, wait, no, you can't? We're not going to let you?
In law, the employer may do practically anything he wishes. The laws that are established are not all necessarily provincial laws that protect an employer. A lot of them are federal laws, so there's an obvious need for more cooperation between the province and the federal government insofar as requirements placed on companies. But to go back to your example of the white farm manufacturing business in the Brantford area, that was not something that happened overnight. The provincial government tried desperately to put on a good face and bail them out. They had the local member and recently appointed cabinet minister make a big announcement last week about $7 million of bridge financing. But in fact, that wasn't adequate. They've been looking at that problem for a long time. My colleague and our former leader, Bob Nixon, has raised the issue many times. Former NDP member Mac Makarchuk has been after this issue for a long time. So this wasn't an overnight happening, Don, and to ask if the Liberals would slap on immediate new requirements for new employers coming into the province, the answer is that we wouldn't be quite that stupid, that we would negotiate these issues with the federal government, and quite frankly, we would involve the labor people. The administrators and senior people in labor have got to have some voice in this, too.
Well, Mr. Rivola, just very quickly, to get a reply on that, did your party, the Conservatives, fall apart, walk away from the white issue? Should they have done more?
Well, I believe the Conservatives in Toronto, in fact, it was in the Free Press today, reported in the Free Press today that they were not aware that the American parent company or the financing company in the States was going to not accept the $7 million guarantee that the Ontario government had put up. And I believe the comment was made in the paper that if the Ontario government had known, they could have perhaps taken other steps to try to resolve whatever the difference or whatever the problem perceived to be by this American company. Now, I'm only quoting from the Free Press, so...
Okay, I appreciate your comments on that, and we'll be back right after this brief commercial message.
Get your tickets now for the fight, Hagler versus Hearn, Monday, April 15th at London Garden. Marvelous Marvin Hagler and Thomas Hitman Hearn compete for the World Middleweight Championship. And tickets are on sale for $20 at the London Garden box office and all Sam's outlets. All seats reserved, so hurry and get your ticket. Hagler versus Hearn, Monday, April 15th at London Garden. Plus, also on the same card, Canada's Olympic boxing medalist Willie DeWitt. Don't be disappointed. Get your tickets now for the fight.
Yeah, let me jump in, and we're getting down to the very end of the program here, so I got to keep the answers as short as you can possibly give me, maybe 15 or 20 seconds, but I'm looking for sort of nuggets of thought here on the tourism issue. We have a situation in Ontario where we've got hundreds of thousands of people on our southern border with lots of money to spend at a premium, and yet we've got a tourism problem in this province. We've got a deficit in it. Give me some solutions. Obviously, what we're doing now seems to be wrong. Is it a tax problem? What's the story? Let's go this way and back around. Okay.
Well, London doesn't come high on the government's the Conservative government's priority list. I've had small motel operators come to me and say, gosh, that new program that was announced in 1981-82 is my cup of tea. I go to help them make application. They say London isn't a tourist center. I say nonsense. I think that's one of the keys. That is, the tourist in Ontario is treated one way here and another way in the north, as is the tourist operator.
How do we fix that? What do we do?
I think we have a consistent policy for hotel motel operators right across the province, and not one for southern Ontario and another one for the north.
Okay.
Thank you. I think we're going to have a huge deficit there forever, just as long as we have winters and people go south. So, you know, building hotels, which we are doing, and as you know, as an alderman here, I've been fighting for development here and creation of arts and things that will bring tourists here. I think this is one way to go, and we will get our share. Tourists will be the biggest single industry by the year 2000 in the world. And I think London will have its share. I'm proud of what we've done in municipally over the years. And I can see us having a very successful tour.
What do we do if you're an MPP, though? Is there nothing Queen's Park can do?
Well, if I'm an MPP, there'll be lots Queen's Park will do.
Can you give us an example of something?
Well, I think that we will not. And I recognize what Mr. Van Horn is saying, that I've been down to Ottawa as an alderman fighting for London. I've been to Queen's Park. And as you say, London's a half area. In other words, because of good management here in London, we are penalized because they say, oh, there's areas that need it more than you do, because our employment rate isn't quite as bad as some other cities. We don't get these things. Well,
okay.
I'm going to want to change that.
Okay. Ms. Boyd?
I certainly think that the regressive taxes that we have on such things as hotel accommodation and food and so on hurt us very badly in terms of our tourist dollars. Certainly the policy should be looked at and geared in a way that takes an account of the kind of industry that a city is able to provide. I find it really disgraceful that we spend the kind of money we have in Maniwaki Lodge, which very few people are ever going to have access to anyway. And yet a town like London has not got the support that it should have for a strong tourist industry.
And finally, Mr. Smith.
The way to create jobs is to eliminate the taxation, the excessive taxation that's already been alluded to. David Pearson wants to, as you say, reduce the taxes on certain tourist elements. The average person in Ontario now pays over 50% of his income in one form of taxation or another, and I find it ludicrous that the three major parties are out there promising us billions and billions of dollars in public giveaway schemes during this election. Those billions of dollars have to be taxed, and they're not going to create jobs. They're going to cost us jobs.
Let me find out one quick thing about the Freedom Party. Would you go so far as to give tax incentives for tourists?
Well, no. We have to eliminate taxes all across the board.
What I meant by that was, I mean, assuming that there may still be some tax that Ontario people would have to pay, is there a way of creating some sort of incentive for, I'm thinking of America specifically.
Well, why not create incentives for all the people of Ontario by reducing
the
taxes?
Here.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. And we'll be back right after this brief commercial message.
If you're looking for great food at a good price, someplace relaxed, comfortable, where the service is outstanding, well, that's Steve's Restaurant. Enjoy all your favorite foods cooked to perfection. Some delicious choices include Steve's own panzerotti, veal parmigiana, steaks, fish and chips, vegetarian dishes, finger foods, and so much more. Steve's Restaurant invites you out to help celebrate their 8th anniversary. So bring the entire family out to Steve's Restaurant, 190 Wortley Road in Elmwood.
We're back with our program, and I think we should talk about the Beauvais Commission report as it relates to university tuition fees. Of course, in London North, where these people are running, we have the University of Western Ontario, and of course, there is Fanshawe College. The NDP want tuition fees frozen. They say the students are paying enough. The Liberals have a suggestion, and so do the Conservatives on the Beauvais report. First of all, I'd like to ask Marion Boyd, when the NDP say they want tuition frozen, who's going to pay? Certainly the cost of education is going up, and you're talking about freezing the tuition fees. Where are we going to get the money?
Well, you know, we always seem to talk about having only so much money. It really depends on the wastage that there is in the money that the government already has, and also a fair taxation system. We have 3,000 people who aren't paying their share in Ontario, and we certainly can be collecting more taxes than we are. That's where we would get it. If we don't freeze tuition, what we're doing is cutting down accessibility to universities by poor students. And the student loan situation has not kept pace with the whole situation of tuition fees. Students can't get jobs because there's very few jobs available for them in order to pay for it. And what we're essentially doing is cutting the accessibility of our universities, which was a major aim of this province and its conservative government for the last few years. We think it's a disgrace to end a very good system, which adds a great deal to our gross national product in terms of the educated population.
Well, certainly there was a hue and cry when the Beauvais Commission suggested something in the area of a 25% increase in university tuition fees. And at this point, the Conservatives, they've said, well, we're not going to go for a 25% fee hike, as suggested by Beauvais. But Mr. Avola, so far the Conservatives haven't been specific. They haven't said what kind of an increase they'll go for. Why are you people sitting on the fence about this?
Well, I think there are many things that they're trying to get out of the Beauvais report. As I see it, and I'm speaking now for myself and what my beliefs are and what I would commit to do. The university student right now is paying approximately 16 to 18% of their cost of education in tuition fees. From what I understand, and this is in discussion with some people in Queen's Park over recent weeks, that in studying the Beauvais report, there are many things in there they disagree with totally. One of them is the recommended increase, and I would think that the recommended increase is going to be in the area that I view it, and I would feel that I could feel comfortable with, would be that the people, the students, would pay probably 20 to 22% rather than the 16 to 18%. I don't think that that's unreasonable for the quality of education that they get in Ontario, and I think Ontario has one of the finest educational systems in the world, and I don't think that's excessive to ask.
Mr. Van Horn, the Liberals have suggested a moderate increase, perhaps in line with salary guidelines, 3 to 5%. Is that realistic, and do you feel the same way?
Well, certainly it is much more realistic than the whopping increase suggested by Beauvais. But what we feel in addition to that, if we could put it in more broad terms, that it would be tied to the inflation rate with a ceiling on it, and that ceiling would be somewhere in the 3 to 5% area. But we have a handful of other policy concerns that would go hand in hand with that to improve a lot of the colleges and universities. We feel that the decline in the system should be arrested by pegging operating grant increases to the inflation rate, adopt the Fisher Report recommendation to provide an additional $25 million per year for equipment and furniture replacement, and all you have to do is look through some of the labs at Western to see some of the antiquated equipment with vacuum-assist tubes as opposed to transistors and materials that are no longer in use or usable. To understand that there is a need for that type of expenditure. And beyond that, we would insist on an improvement in the student aid program so that no capable student is denied access to higher education.
Mr. Smink, as a representative of the Freedom Party, we'd probably like to find out where you stand on this. And as the name implies, Freedom Party, would you make it free for the students?
No, not at all. Quite the opposite. We believe that people should be more responsible for their own actions and their own education. We believe that people should pay more so that they realize exactly what the costs are that are involved in obtaining an education. We have to get away from this notion that people rely on the government from cradle to grave for their livelihood and for their education, for their jobs, and everything else.
Thank you very much, people, for your thoughtful comments, the representatives of London North. And we'd like to remind our listeners that Radio 98 will be back again next Sunday with another political broadcast aiming towards the May 2nd Ontario election. This is Don Ambrose.
And it's 23 minutes now before 11 o'clock on Radio 98 from the Weather Center. Partly cloudy with a chance of a shower or a thunderstorm.